Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 4th of February, 2021. On the podcast today, Cahill Frail, Executive Chairman of Open Orphan, talks about the new challenge study quarantine clinic that they've just opened in East London. Also on the podcast, Harvey Sinclair, CEO of E-Energy, discusses their pre-close trading update, which shows triple-digit percentage gains on revenue. Also, Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, talks about Elon Musk's crypto pumping, which he doesn't like, Jeff Bezos, who's not pumping, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin, I think Polkadot as well, he mentioned. Plus, as always, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you. Top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. And the top five most liked RNSs too, or most read. By the way, you can check those lists out at voxmarkets.co.uk. You also see, actually, webinars. In fact, you can register there for Alba Mineral Resources webinar, Tuesday, 9th of February, 5:30. There's articles on SigmaRoc. There's also our COVID-19 index. Let's see what the biggest riser is today. It's E-Therapeutics up 7.5%. Biggest faller, Hemogenics Pharmaceuticals down 5.8%. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Cahill Frail, Executive Chairman of Open Orphan, ORPH's ticker. Cahill, thanks for joining me.
Justin, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Now, we haven't spoken for a while. You've got so much going on, but it's nice of you to come in today. You've got a new challenge study quarantine clinic up and running, so we'll talk about that. But as always, Cahill, for people maybe not familiar, just explain what Open Orphan's about, please.
Yeah, Open Orphan is very simply, Justin. We're now a full-fledged clinical trial company. We're the world leader in the testing of vaccines and antivirals. And we're primarily based out of where I'm here, East London, Whitechapel, where we've got our quarantine clinics, plural, because we did have one and now we have two.
Excellent stuff. All right. Well, tell us about this then. It's a new one. It's in Whitechapel. Tell me more about it, if you could, Cahill.
Yeah, look, very importantly, we started the year ago with one 24-bed, the only dedicated one in Europe. And then very nice of the Vaccine Task Force, they provide us access to a second one. That's a 19-bed quarantine facility in the Royal Free Hospital on the 11th floor. And then lately we have got our existing one booked up till Christmas. And we had one, we have a lot of clients looking for access. And we had one particular very important pharma company who said we want access, they can't skip the queue. So they very kindly paid to convert the hotel directly across the road. It's a small boutique hotel, so it was actually not dissimilar to a quarantine unit. They paid for it, and not alone they paid for the conversion, they paid the first year's rent. So now we've got another 19 beds directly across the road, so we can share staff, share laboratory services. Everything was formerly known as the Whitechapel Boutique 5-star Hotel. Now it's known as the Whitechapel Quarantine Clinic, part of the Open Orphan Group.
Wow. So when you say in the RNS, you say you mentioned it's been done in a very efficient manner, cost-efficient manner. It couldn't get more cost-efficient than that, could it?
Yeah, it's called free, and the rent paid for the first year. And the beauty about it, that client study will only take up 15% capacity, maybe 20. So we're already filling it up, and we have it half full for the first half of the year. So yeah, but again, we've been lucky. There's a huge demand to test vaccines and antivirals, so we're just filling that demand. And going forward, there's going to be more. So look, right place, right time. But I think it's really importantly, we didn't pay any money for it, and we now have also confirmed that we're debt-free. There's no debt in our balance sheet. We have 20 million cash in the bank, and we're profitable. So it's not a bad start to the year.
No, fair play, Graham. I mean, you first come on, and literally the company was, you know, single-digit market cap, and look where you are now. So you've done very well. So how many access to how many quarantine facilities do you have at the moment? Then is it two or three?
Three. The original QMB one, and so we now have access to the only other UK quarantine facility. That's the Royal Free Hospital Infectious Disease. We've got access to that for the UK government COVID challenge studies, so we can run them all there, and then we now have our third clinic, which is literally across the road, and it's leased. So we've no capital expenditure whatsoever, and say free rent for the first year, because a client, one of our very large clients, paid for the rent for the first year in addition to all conversion costs.
Yeah. What about people now thinking, right, okay, you're busy because of COVID. Now, once this dies down, maybe all the vaccines come online next year and all that stuff, and people, are, you know, the hospitals aren't filling up. There's not such a panic and a pandemic. What about the business then?
Well, very good point, but the bulk of our business is very much non-COVID. The client that paid to convert this is basically other vaccines, non-COVID vaccines. So I think we're going to see a lot. I've always said there's no money spent in vaccines for 30 years. We've got a pandemic. There'll be more money spent in the next 10 years than ever spent in vaccines, and we're the world leader in testing them. But separately, I know it's very unfortunate, it's worrying, but it's these new variants means there'll be new vaccines. And we've already started work on Codagenics, which is the first of the next generation. It's needle-free, it's a nasal spray, and it may give 5 to 7 years immunity. That trial is underway as a phase one. So, yes, COVID's under control, hospitalization's dropping, but I think governments and pharma companies around the world know they have to keep making more and more generations of the vaccines to deal with these. I don't call them mutations, I think it's more importantly variations on the virus.
Yeah. So essentially, I mean, it is like the flu virus, isn't it? Every year, you know, and it alternates, it iterates and evolves, and you have to adjust the vaccines every year, isn't it, really?
Yep, look, the reality just going forward, I've had my vaccine yesterday. We're key workers. I'm the last one. We made sure all our frontline staff, because we have COVID positive people coming through our doors every day of the week. So we've everybody vaccinated. But the reality is we'll all have to go for a number of years, our annual COVID jab. As we're getting our flu jab, you'll now be, the whole world say, go get a COVID jab. But there'll be a newer and newer version. Just look at Pfizer today. They guided they're going to do $15 billion in COVID vaccination business this year. That is a phenomenal business. And going forward, there's more companies, more iterations. So all I'm saying, we're going to stick to knitting. It's a very good space. And we're in a really, really happy position at the moment.
Excellent stuff. Okay, before we end, Cahill, as always, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're doing, but are not yet following the story, just give them those three bullet points as to why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add Open Orphan to their watch list, please.
Yeah, I think the best way to put it is that we're going to be very busy going forward. We try and deliver everything we promise. We don't like debt. We want to keep growing the share price. We've lots of cash in the bank. And we're in a very profitable business that's expanding. So I think they're pretty good reasons all around to jump on board. And let's see where this year takes us. But I think it's going to be a lot more upward and onwards for the rest of this year.
Excellent stuff, Kyle. Good to chat to you. And like I say, lots going on. So hopefully we catch up very soon. Thanks very much.
This is a pleasure. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Harvey Sinclair, CEO of E-Energy. AAS is a ticker there. Harvey, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, good morning, Justin.
You've released a pre-close trading update, and do you know what? I'm looking at some triple-digit percentage growth here, which is always very good. I'm surprised the market hasn't gone on to this yet, but looking very good. So before we get into that, for people who maybe you know, have never heard of the company, can you just explain what you're all about, Harvey, please?
Sure. So look, E-Energy is a integrated energy services business. We've principally got two parts to our business. We have a smart procurement energy management business following the acquisition of Beyond last December. This allows companies to switch to zero carbon energy through a sophisticated tech trading platform and allows them to manage their consumption as efficiently as possible. And then we have an energy reduction business, which is principally energy as a service that allows customers to reduce their energy spend through a subscription service. That core business is called Elight, and that is doing, phenomenally well at the moment based on our organic growth strategy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's get into that. Let's get into the top line first. So this is for the 6 months up until the 31st of December. So the top line, tell us what the growth there.
Yeah, so look, revenue, Eli increased by 235% during H1 based on a comparable for the previous previous period, H1 to 2019. Organic growth is up 125%. We're absolutely, exceeding our expectations. We're on track for our growth trajectory.
Yeah, and all group entities reported positive operating EBITDA. So there's a lot more to it than top line, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've had a very clear strategy of driving both growth and also getting to that your break-even point and beyond with positive EBITDA. So we're really pleased that not only has our top line grown, but we've been able to build out our operating model that allows for the growth that we're investing in, but at the same time delivers us the earnings that we expected to see.
Yeah, and the projects are up. So 111 projects, 95% increase on 6 months period, and the value's gone up as well.
Yeah, I think this demonstrates just quite how strong the demand in the market is now for carbon reduction strategies. It also allows us to demonstrate the scalability of our business model. When you look at the intensity of how we're installing these projects in such a restricted environment, it demonstrates how far we've come in being able to get that scalable business model working on plan.
Yeah, cool. And talk about the acquisition there, Beyond. How's that progressing there?
It's been fantastic. It's a superb business. It's been around 20 years. The entire team has been retained. They're all shareholders and wed to the business strategy. So this was really a merger more than an exit for them. They have seen the potential that E-Energy can bring to their customers. And already, we've started engaging with their customer base, large charitable organizations, large multi-site retailers. So their business is trading well, responding really positively to our partnership and our involvement. And extremely excited about what we can deliver to their customer base. They've got over 800 customers, and they've got an amazing renewal rate, 94% renewal rate of their customers historically. And so far, having spoken to many of their big customers, there is real engagement.
Yeah, yeah. And Alex, you've achieved this despite COVID. Has it hindered you in any way? I mean, could you have done better?
Oh, it's a tough one. I mean, COVID is certainly posing challenges logistically. I think that it provides a tougher environment to, get access to sites. We've been fortunate that our core market in education has been obviously running it under occupancy. So they have, empty sites. So that's been very fortunate for us. New business has its challenges because, a lot of people working from home, call centers and, switchboards are, not manned as frequently as perhaps they might be during normal operating hours. But, despite that, our pipeline's huge. It's on track to deliver what we need to. So, we're just navigating our way through the challenges that it poses and hopefully, we're starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel with, restrictions being lifted in the coming months.
Yeah, well, light is quite appropriate for you guys. But and the outlook, you said you're quite confident you can, that you're going to be progressing for going forward. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Look, we've spent all of 2020 building a phenomenal pipeline. We don't have a pipeline which converts in days. We have a 3 to 6 month conversion pipeline. From when we typically start engaging with the customer and delivering projects. So we've always got good visibility on the forward trajectory. The pipeline assessment looks really positive. We've delivered the most proposals in the history of the business in a quarter in the last quarter just gone. So, that was partly fueled by the government initiatives driving state schools to consider energy efficiency measures. So that's given us head of steam. And, you know, we're actually now starting to look at a lot of multi-site big corporate customers in the retail space and in the food services space. So I think that's probably where we see quite a lot of growth potential this year.
Mm-hmm. Good. I mean, just look at the chart there. It's looking very good in an uptrend. It's all looking good for you. So if people are liking this, Harvey, but not yet following the story, let's have those three bullet points as to why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add e-energy to their watch list, please.
Sure. So look, e-energy is unique in that it's able to offer customers both a switch to green energy and also enables them to reduce their consumption at the same time without using capital. So the net zero agenda is driving huge interest in our product offering. And I think we're one of the few genuine ESG business propositions available to investors on the AIM market at the moment.
Excellent stuff. Harvey, good to chat to you as always, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenda Goodman. And I tell you what, he's sick of someone. He's on his soapbox. He's the author of The Crypto Trader. And oddly, I'm assuming you're annoyed because you're not in the coin that's being pumped on Twitter. Is that right, Glenn?
I was annoyed about the GameStop thing, and I had GameStop shares, remember? So,
Yeah.
I'm a man of principle.
Yeah, but you dumped them.
Well, eventually, yeah, because they were overpriced, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're always overpriced, were they, really?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so what's, I mean, Elon Musk on Twitter.
I'm sick of him. Yeah. He's driving me insane. Everywhere I go, I just see tweets from Elon Musk, everybody retweeting them and clapping like seals. Every time he tweets anything, he gets like 100,000 likes for a load of old nonsense. It's just like nerd humour. It's not funny. It's not funny nerd humour. There is such a thing. And his is not it. Mm. And it just gets on my nerves. He's all the time he tweets these little things which he thinks are hilarious because they're kind of meme-style tweets. Or sometimes they are just memes. He loves memes. So he tweets memes. He also tweets little phrases that are kind of meme-ish. And he thinks he's bloody Oscar Wilde.
Yeah, it's not funny,
mate. It's not funny. And it's driving me mad because he keeps pumping various coins like Dogecoin, which you've just mentioned there, the joke cryptocurrency that was invented some years ago for a joke is actually a meme itself. And he keeps pumping it, so the price keeps going through the roof, which he thinks is hilarious and lots of other people think is hilarious. I don't care. I don't find it interesting. You know, trading is about making money. Investing is about making money. And while Elon Musk is the richest man in the world, all the people who are clapping him and following him are not getting anywhere. It's like, what's the point? What's the point of them?
Yeah, and do you know what, right? Essentially, you think, I know, he's seen as a maverick businessman, but he's just pumping something. Yeah. I mean, Dogecoin, people started talking to Dogecoin to me a long time ago. I just ignored them because there's so many cryptos out there. I shouldn't have ignored them, by the looks of it. But, and this was when it really, really was under the radar. You know, it was nowhere near. It's now in the top 20, isn't it, the coin market cap. But it's nowhere near that. But what I'm saying is, he's a business guy, and he just basically he's ramping a cryptocurrency on. And you think, is there some law against that? He's got, like I said,
you would think.
It's like when you've got that many followers, literally, you can, you know, literally tweet out a dandelion, you know, icon, and people will sort of clap and retweet and everything and applaud you. You can do anything. You can do a poo emoji if you want, and people think it's hilarious, you know.
Yeah.
The more followers you get, you don't have to raise your standard.
That's not even exaggeration. He actually
no, exactly. But the thing is, the more followers you get, the more followers you get, you don't have to raise your standard. Your standard can go really far down because it's, you know, because you've got more people just echo it in that chamber of yours, you know. So, and it's ridiculous. It's like, I'm just thinking, surely someone should, I don't know, is there any law against that? I mean, in pumping, because, you know, there's no, with a business, you can sort of value it in some way. Now, with Dogecoin, of course, people are saying that's the one to own and he says it's the one to own. But how do we know that? It's all speculation, isn't it? And so I'm just worried it's gone up 450%.
He doesn't say, hey, everyone, you really must buy Dogecoin, which would be pumping. There were, you know, plenty of other people on Twitter do exactly that.
It's for the people, he's saying.
And that is legally dodgy, I think, saying stuff like that. I never say stuff like that. Hey, everyone, you've got to buy blah, blah. It's up to people whether they buy blah, blah. You shouldn't encourage them to, because then you're basically a financial advisor without a license. He's cleverer than that, obviously, because he's Elon Musk and he's extremely clever. So he just writes things like, Dogecoin is the people's crypto. You know, stuff like that. Or no high, like he wrote this morning, no highs, no lows, only Doge. Yeah. It's like, it's not funny. Cracking, it's not interesting.
No, no. he's sitting there thinking he's very clever doing this, isn't he? Just smiling to himself, yes. Thinking, yeah, that's got a million retweets. Because, but he's pumping something. I mean, is there a chance it'll spike up? Because it raised, it's gone up.
Yeah, every time he says anything. Look what happened to Bitcoin last week.
Yeah.
He pumped Bitcoin by basically just changing the profile text in his Twitter profile to hashtag Bitcoin. And the world went absolutely crazy. The price of Bitcoin shot up. Let me get my chart up here. It went... and actually, it's interesting because it broke through a breakout line that I'd been watching and putting on my Twitter feed for quite some time, a sort of resistance line. And his tweet caused Bitcoin to shoot up and break through that line, but only temporarily, because that's the problem with tweet-based trading, is that it doesn't tend to last very long, as we've seen with GameStop and the Reddit guys. They were able to push GameStop up enormously, but now it's come quite a long way down already and will probably come down further eventually to reach fundamental value at some point. But with Bitcoin, he pumped the price from 32,000 to almost $39,000, like a massive rise in the price of Bitcoin caused purely by him just writing hashtag Bitcoin on his profile. But then, of course, the price came down once everybody stopped being so excited. It came almost all the way back down to where it had started. It reached almost $32,000 again, nipped below that resistance line. But I was still watching it closely because, as far as I was concerned, that was probably a retest of the breakout that we saw. And indeed, that's what it turned out to be. So I've been making money because I'm back in Bitcoin. And Bitcoin is now, as we speak, back up to 37,500. Ethereum, though, is the real one to watch as far as I'm concerned and a lot of people are concerned. It's just broken out to new highs again. And what's most interesting, I think, and what's getting people excited about Ethereum chart-wise is that if you look at the Ethereum to Bitcoin chart, ETH/BTC, what you'll see is that Ethereum, relative to Bitcoin, was very high back in 2018 when we were at the peak of the Bitcoin boom. And then it suffered really, really badly in the downturn that followed in 2018, 2019, and 2020. And so relative to Bitcoin, the price went down precipitously. But now, if you look at the ETH-BTC chart, it kind of looks like it formed a bottom in 2020. And now here in February 2021, it's breaking out. That price is, so Ethereum relative to Bitcoin is now in an uptrend. So that makes it extra interesting, because even though Bitcoin itself is in an uptrend against the dollar and Ethereum is in an uptrend against the dollar, you've also got Ethereum in an uptrend against Bitcoin itself, which means that it has a kind of extra rocket up its bum, pushing it upwards. And it's been doing very, very well indeed price-wise.
I just had my nephew is 18 or 19, but he's obviously in a bit of crypto trading. He's on, he gets his investment advice, I think largely from TikTok. But that's the way it is, isn't it? That's a new place.
No, but the problem with TikTok financial advice is it's all little bits and bites. You don't get a chance to explain things properly.
No, I know, but listen, he's new to it, right? And he showed me a picture today, and he's held Ethereum from $600. So he's doing well. What is it now? 1600.
That's very good.
So, and he did a screenshot of some Raoul Paul. Do you know who he is? Raoul Paul?
Why did he do a screenshot of Raoul?
He just said, well, the thing is, you know, Henry, my nephew, he just takes things for, you know, he takes people at their word. So this guy here, he's a verified person on Twitter. He's obviously well followed. 3,800 likes this last thing he said about Ethereum. He said it's going to 20K. He said, do you think this is true? I said, listen, it's in his interest to pump that to 20K. No one knows where.
Raoul Powell has actually said publicly that, he said on Twitter publicly, that he is, as he puts it, irresponsibly long Bitcoin. And also he's bought Ethereum, a lot of Ethereum. He kind of makes a joke of that he's irresponsible, you know, because he knows he's a clever guy, very clever guy. He knows about risk levels and all the rest of it. But when it comes to Bitcoin, he's kind of admitting, I'm getting carried away here. So yes, he has a very large vested interest in Bitcoin and Ethereum doing well.
So he said, what do you think of that? And I said, listen, no one can tell the future, right? It's in his interest to pump it hard. And he said, do you think, he asked me if I'm going to buy it now, Ethereum. I said, listen, it's got to drop by a big drop for me to buy it now because I'm not in the right price. I should have bought earlier, a lot earlier. It'd be a big sell-off for me to get involved. He said, what price do you think I should sell at? And I said, listen, one of the hardest things about investing or trading is getting the right price, getting a good price. And you seem to have that with Ethereum. It looks like it's a decent crypto, you know, possibly very good potential. Plus, it's got momentum, hype behind it. So I would hang on. But if you want to take some profit, you know, sell off and let the rest ride because you're into the good price. Like I said, there's lots of momentum behind it. And they say it's one of the ones, isn't it, that the people reckon is useful, you know, very useful, and it's going to play a major part going forward in the world of crypto, isn't it, and blockchain. Yeah. And,
exactly. I mean, that's the thing. Raoul Powell doesn't make stuff up. He's as I say, he's very, very clever, but he's also an excellent macroeconomic analyst. So he kind of always looks at the bigger picture and then he gets an opinion on the bigger picture. But as he himself would admit, it's just his opinion and he doesn't know the actual future because he hasn't got a crystal ball. But obviously he's looking at the various factors that could affect, you know, the price of Ethereum. He sees the way that the industries are using Ethereum, the DeFi industry, for example, which we've talked about using Ethereum very heavily, that kind of thing. And so he's reached a strong opinion about it, as he has about Bitcoin. But that doesn't mean, as he'd be the first to point out, that doesn't mean he's infallible. He's been very wrong about big things in the past, but also very right about other big things in the past. So even with somebody as clever as that, your nephew needs to kind of take it with a pinch of salt, really.
Yeah, well, when people say, this is what he said, right? He said, Ethereum is up 126% year to date. It's Feb 3rd, FFS. I still expect it to hit 20K by around the turn of the year. And now, you know, when you use words like expect, that's predictions and forecasts. People can't see into the future. So what he means to say there, he'd like it to hit 20,000. Because you can't, I don't know how he's modelling that out. I haven't seen any models. Maybe he has somewhere. But always be careful. When people would put price targets on something, they, you know, have they got any substance to back that up? How are they valuing that? I can do it. You can do it with a business, you know? It's hard to do it with crypto. It's really hard to do.
It is really hard.
So
I agree with you totally. It's really, really hard to put any kind of fundamental value on a cryptocurrency. It's like Tesla, the exaggerated version of Tesla, because at least Tesla has revenues and profits, even if its share price is completely out of, it's in a different world. It's in a different world from the actual revenues and profits of Tesla. But at least you could, you know, so what people are doing, obviously, is they're getting out their crystal balls and they're forecasting. I reckon he's going to be the biggest seller of cars in the world. I reckon the batteries that he makes will power every vehicle in the universe and blah, 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 blah. You know, so they have these ideas and those ideas may or may not come true. It's actually interesting because I read a thing about Jeff Bezos.
Bezos.
Who, as we know... Would you say Bezos?
Why do you have problems pronouncing names? You used to call him Elon Musk for ages. Now you call him Bezos. What's the problem with you? It's the E's you're getting wrong. Elon.
I don't know.
You said Elon. Now with Bezos. Bezos. Saying Bezos.
Is it Bezos or Bezos?
Just call him Jeff Best. Jeff Best.
Jeff. Okay, so Jeff.
Yeah.
Right.
Jeffy B of Amazon. Yeah, go on.
Jeffy B is leaving his job as Amazon CEO. Anyway, because people are doing various kind of obituaries of him, as it were, I read this thing about an interview he did in 1997. He did some kind of Harvard commencement speech or Harvard talk he did. It wouldn't have been a commencement speech because he wasn't famous enough back then. But he did a talk to a bunch of Harvard students, and then they gave him hell afterwards about his business. Remember this back in 1997.
Yeah, yeah, I read his book. I know, yeah.
Yeah, and he said... basically, he said to them, one of the students said to him, rather, you really should sell out to Barnes & Noble. Just take the money, because once the income... Do you remember this was actually the big kind of narrative at the time, if you can remember back that far? Mm. The narrative was, once the big incumbents get their act together, they're going to squash all the newcomers like Amazon. That's what every clever person said back at the time. Once Barnes & Noble get their online offering up, then Amazon's finished. And of course, that is not how history turned out. And actually, he replied to the guy, and I have utmost respect for him, because he replied to the student, maybe you're right, you know, maybe that is going to happen, maybe they will. Mm. He said, I am taking a kind of calculated risk here, that I think that slow, heavy incumbents of industries are slow and heavy by their nature, and will not get things turned around in time to beat the newcomers like me, but I might be wrong, and yes, I might end up with a dud business.
Yeah,
I just think that's so realistic and so brave simultaneously, to be able to keep going day after day, knowing in your heart of hearts that there's a damn good chance that all your work will be for nothing. I mean,
no, he knew more. No. Do you know what? The reason why he said that, he had the confidence to say that, is because he knew more. And if you
know,
he did know more. He knew more than they knew. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying he had some kind of insight into the future. What I'm saying is, he realized, and if you read the book, he realized that a traditional bricks and mortar business is not similar to an online business. Just because you sell books from a store doesn't mean you can do it online. And the setup, the warehousing, the infrastructure, the ordering, the online side of it is completely different. And they were specialists in that. Amazon were absolute specialists, and he'd figured out so many problems. They were like 10 years ahead of Barnes & Noble. And so if Barnes & Noble wanted to do it, what they should have done is, like I said, just bought him, but he didn't want that. So, you realise, it was two separate businesses. Okay, the only thing in common was books, but everything else pretty much was different. So for them to just say, Barnes & Noble could have done it, but they've took a lot of cash from a standing go.
Well, that's the thing, though. That's what the students said. If they said Barnes & Noble have got almost infinite resources, they can borrow ridiculous amounts of money if they want to. You know, what he's saying is they could have turned their business on a dime if they wanted to. If they really had the urge to do it, they could have harnessed all their money and resources and just gone, right, we're buying 50 warehouses right now and we're going totally online, you know. But
what do you think of it?
No, they're not going to.
Read the book, honestly. Is it officially? Is anyone he sort of done interviews for the official sort of autobiography? It's long.
Is it called the Are you talking about?
I don't know which one it was. I read about three years back.
Is it the one
back
called The Everything Store?
Maybe, yes. But there's phenomenal stories in it. And there's one point where, you know, when they went from books to like different things, toys and all that stuff, and you realise they've got a problem here because they want to automate it, but actually being able to box stuff all different sizes, shapes, and get it, you know, packaging efficiently is very hard. And they've got all these experts here who've been used to, you know, sort of these kind of this logistics kind of side of it. And they're scratching their heads saying, normally we don't package all these kind of different shapes and sizes. And they tried this new system, and they went to this warehouse, and literally these guys had a room full of packages just not delivered, massive, you know, it was a couple of stories tall. He said, what's that? And he's well known for blowing his top. He said, we're way behind. We can't back in. We don't know where they're going. And it was like a chaos. And so he paid one of the best guys to come in and try and sort it out. But literally they had, and one of his things is, the business is everything. If you work there, you work there, full stop, and that's it. Life comes second. But he said, you've got to hire the best of the best. And he said, that's what he always does. He gets the best, smartest brains on it. But when you think of it, eBay should have won out easily. You know, they got no stock, they got no capital overheads like that. They don't have to invest in warehouses. They're just the middle manager to cut off everyone else selling stuff, you know, back and forth. And they could have gone with all the stores, new stuff. And eBay should have won that battle, but no, because you've got Jeff Bezos at the head of Amazon and he killed it. And if you look at the models, both models, eBay should have won that war and they haven't. Literally, they're just coming back a little bit now, I think. But if you look at the revenue, Amazon did $100 billion in the last quarter, eBay, $2.9 billion. And that's up from 2.1, so they're quite impressed with that. So they're crushing it. But a phenomenal book. And the guy is, you know, something about him, headstrong and super. You wouldn't, when someone starts, his vein on his head, when he starts getting angry, Jeff, stand back. He really throws a wobbler, you know, shouts his head off nonstop with people. So,
and he has his infamous question mark emails as well.
Yeah.
You know about that?
Yeah.
He just sends when he sees something that he thinks is he's not happy with in an email from someone else. Often it's a customer complaint, isn't it? Somebody's written in, and because he has a direct email address, he actually sometimes gets them, and he'll forward it with just a question mark as his comment to somebody very high, and then that person very high passes it to the next person down, and eventually some poor flunky gets an email that's been passed from their boss's boss, from Jeff to their boss's boss, the boss's boss, and eventually down to them, and it just has this question mark, this ominous question mark from Jeff.
It's very powerful
imagery.
It's an interesting read, but it's quite a long book, but an interesting read, and you see, he is a force, like I said, there's no mistaking that he played a major role in the success of that business. When, you know, like I said, there's so many hurdles and obstacles to it being successful, but now it's one of the most. Do you know what? I look at my email, right? My inbox. I'd say at the moment, on Gmail, it breaks it down into different tabs. But my primary one, which is where all the important stuff come in, I don't want to miss, I'd say about 30% of them, 25%, 30%, are Amazon. It's like, that's phenomenal. That wouldn't have been like that, 2 years ago. But it's so, especially in lockdown, everyone's just ordering Amazon, isn't it? It's just nuts. It's conquered the world.
Lockdown has.
Anyway, let's talk about your Bitcoin trading. What's happening? What are you doing with Bitcoin? And what are you long? What are you short?
Short. Am I long or short? Are you asking?
I know you're short, but physically. But are you long Bitcoin now? Are you?
Unfortunately. I am. Hold on, give me a second.
What do you mean? You know you're long or not?
Yeah. No, I was just looking up my exact situation.
You don't actually trade anything, do you? just pretend.
I've been making it up all these years. Just totally. I've been living off handouts from people outside Budgeons. So, I am long Bitcoin. I am long Ethereum. I think I said this at the beginning of the podcast, didn't I? Can't remember.
When did you get long?
Let's have a look. Hold on. At the chart. Chart. Right. So I went long on that initial breakout, the Musk breakout, we could call it. And then I sold with a profit when I saw that it was hurtling back downwards as fast as it was hurtling upwards. So I made a bit of a profit there, which was nice. But then I just watched it while it kind of idled its way downwards over the past week. And I actually started thinking maybe this isn't going to happen. But then it just perked its way up above that resistance line once again. Remember, for those of you who know a bit about charting, a resistance line, once it's broken, once the price goes upwards through the resistance line then becomes the support line. So it's the one that you don't want to see broken on the way down again. So in other words, after a price has broken out upwards, it's quite normal for it to then have a bit of a correction downwards, but you don't really want to see that line that it broke upwards through broken downwards again. You don't want to see that badly broken. So what the price of Bitcoin did conveniently was just hover around that line. It went a little bit above it, a little bit below it, over and over again for the past week or so. And that is absolutely fine. Well, not past week, past few days. And so I've been watching it carefully over the past few days. And when it started perking up, I bought it again. And so it's been rising ever since. It's now far away from that line. And it actually even beat the Musk breakout from last week. It just inched above it. And now it's, I don't know, but by the time the podcast goes out, things will have changed. But at the moment, I'm still in Bitcoin and I'm still in Ethereum. and some others. Some others. Do you know as what's well. Odd? I'll tell you the others just because people might be interested. I'm in Polkadot, which is a very popular one. It's very popular from a fundamental point of view. We've talked about it before. A lot of people think that it might be the next big crypto of the future. And I'm also in Maker, which has been hanging around for years and is a very, very complicated financial-based crypto, but is impossible to explain on a podcast or is actually very hard to explain in print. But I understand
basically it's impossible. What do you mean? It's basically, but is there any point trying to understand them?
Yes, because it's kind of like collateral debt obligations or something. You remember the CDOs from the 2009 financial crash? It's extremely obscure, but kind of important at the same time. And Maker could be a clever piece.
No, but what I'm saying is, you're a trader, right?
Innovation.
But you're a trader, right? And you're trying to understand the fundamentals of crypto. When that's, if anything, that's the most questionable thing of all. But you don't even look
well,
at the fundamentals.
I just want to make sure that they're not purely made up, like Dogecoin. Having
said
that,
they're all made up.
Made money. I've made money out of Dogecoin just last week or the week before, whenever it was. When it's, you know,
but does it matter with you? Hang on, Glenn.
So no, the fundamentals don't matter that much.
No, I was going to say because you charge. You're technical. You're TA. You do TA. You don't need to bother with fundamentals. Why are you looking at fundamentals?
Because maybe it makes me feel better.
Do you know what you're doing?
Into, you know, it makes me feel better to be profiting from cryptos if I feel like they actually mean something.
Yeah, I suppose I suppose you're trying. Hang on a sec. You're trying to get away from being a dirty trader. When Glenn, you're a dirty trader. You don't care about the business. You just want to scalp some money here and there. You know, if it moves in the right direction, I'll scalp it. Don't worry. If it pops its head above the resistance line, I'll scalp it. Don't you worry about that. You know, off with the head. So I wouldn't worry about it. But as long as, you know, if you just focus on the top 10 maybe in the coin and just mess around with those and see what. Think about Ethereum, right, at the moment, which is odd. It's topped out there at a new high, but the RSI is tipping over. And, like, so it may have a bit of a breather. Who knows? Who knows? It can change. But it's almost a higher low on the RSI, so the momentum and strength, it's topped out on weaker momentum, basically. So that generally says it could pause, you know. So
let me have a look. Knows. Weaker momentum, you're saying?
Yeah, just the RSI.
Maybe the weaker momentum is a lagging thing, though, because it had this period from the 7th of January all the way through to the 3rd of February or 2nd of February, where it didn't really do much. It just sort of very slowly inched its way upwards. So maybe that kind of dragged the RSI down a bit, but now it's broken out again. So maybe what I'm saying is that maybe the RSI is just lagging and that within a few days, the RSI will be looking a lot more healthy again once it catches up with the actual price.
Okay, cool, marvellous.
Is that cool and marvellous?
Yeah, cool.
I feel like there's... I mean, we talked about GameStop last week, I suppose, but...
That's enough. We don't need any more of that.
Hold on. I'm sure there was... I saved a tweet I wanted to mention. Where is
it? Oh, if you've got a saved tweet, then for heaven's sake, let's get it on the air. I saved this tweet especially for the podcast.
Serious, the same
what
tweet.
What have you got? 2 minutes left here. You've saved it right at the end. Come on.
It's worth it. You know Dave Portnoy, Stool Presidente, the CEO of Barstool, the guy who
I saw him ranting about something. I saw him ranting about that on Twitter. What was he saying? I didn't listen.
Right. Well, he's been ranting about a lot of things. You'll remember that he's the guy who started trading as this bull market in stocks took off. And he was kind of the king of it because he believed or at least said stocks only go up and, you know, they never go down. And in his very short experience of trading, that was indeed the case. So he was making tons of money as everything went up. But then as soon as things get difficult, he, of course, doesn't have the trading tools such as stop losses. He doesn't have the understanding to sort of implement proper risk management.
He'll learn.
So he's saying, well,
he's maybe smart enough guy. He's a smart enough guy to get it right, you know?
He's a very smart guy, but he's also, I don't know, impatient maybe. He's saying, I bought at the absolute high on AMC, Nokia, and Naked, and sold at the exact bottom. So he bought at the absolute high. AMC, of course, was one of those shares. It was kind of, apart from GameStop, it was the second most traded one, ramped one by the people on Reddit. I bought at the absolute high and sold at the Dag Bottom. I lost $700,000 and people are calling me a suit and a, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this word, a P-U-S-S-Y. I may be a P-U-S-S-Y, but I'm definitely not a suit. Yeah, so there, don't, yeah. Just don't call him a suit, whatever you do. Yeah. He lost a lot of money there, but the guy's got a lot more money, so it's not going to kill him. But, yeah.
But that's
but
part of the story. You know, that's part of the story. You can't, you know, people can't keep coming on. In fact, apart from yourself there, you can't keep coming on and saying, I never lose money. You know, I always, win, I mean, because, you know, that's you famously do that. I never lost the trade money.
I lose small amounts of money all the time on, you know, little trades.
I'm joking.
Wrong,
I know that. Whole, I know that. I know that.
Yeah, but the whole point is you've got to keep the amounts of money small. Otherwise, you're in for a lot of trouble in the longer run.
That's good. That's good to end there. That's good. Keep it. That's it. When you start off, keep it there. Start small. When you're on everything, maybe add to the position if it's going the right direction. Absolutely. But the first entry point is always crucial, isn't it? I say that. That's why I said to my nephew, I said, listen, you've got to get the right price, right entry point right. If you get it wrong, it'll be a lot harder to get out of it. But if you get it right. And but you can always add, if you realize you've got it right, you can always add, but don't go massive, full in. That's why your stocks, I always scale in. Because you never know what's around the corner. There may be a big seller in there and may take it down by 20% small caps. And, oh, God, I put all my money into that. So you never go in full tilt, do you? So scale in, and then you can't go much wrong. You could, you know, so start off small, you know?
Start off small. One thing we haven't had time to talk about, which we'll have to leave till next week, I guess, is the whole ethics and sort of the impact on wider society of the whole GameStop debacle. Mm-hmm. And I have you know, various things to say on that, but we haven't got time. So I guess it can wait till next week.
Do you know what, Glenn? It's a heck of a tease for next week. Okay. Cheers, Glenn. Speak next week.
Okay, bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They've got five. Shield Therapeutics, 1.94% up, 52.5. At four, Amrit Pharma, up 1.95% to 209. At three, BPC, down 1.75%, 2.2. At two, Alien Metals, 2.13%, 1.15. And at one, Erasure Mining. It's 2.73%. Up 28.25. Where is that on the chart at the moment? Because I know it had a big dip recently, didn't it? But was it recovered? Let's have a look. No, it's sort of downish. But it's trying to climb back up. But there's a bearish candle there. But there's a big up day today. Yesterday, was it? It's not that big. Anyway, let's move on. Top five most read RNSs are as follows. At five, UK Oil and Gas, interim injunction against unlawful protest update. Exciting. Bushveld Minerals, the Metco Mineral Resource and Reserves update. At three, Bushveld Minerals, Q4 and full year 2020 operation update. At two, Argo Blockchain, investment in digital asset company. And at one, Supply Happy Capital, update on relisting. And let's have a look there. Yeah, Amrit Pharma is there as well. And for multi-year regional distribution agreements in Canada and Israel. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.